Deus Ex Machina and their affiliated stations present the voice talents of Cara Bliss, Joe Hartman, and Adam Dahmoyer on the air in Tesla versus the United States, written by Charles Master. Featuring guest appearances from Charles Master and Dave Nevland, with theatrical direction and organ performances by Adam Dahmoyer. Music composed by Charles Master and Adam Dahmoyer. Recorded and produced by Dave Nevland at Music Tunes Entertainment Studios in Austin, Texas. First broadcast on NoirDame.com in early 2010. Here is Tesla versus the United States.
All rise! Hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the United States is now in session. God bless this honorable court and the United States of America.
The clerk will read the docket.
In the Supreme Court of the United States of America, this 9th of April, 1943, Nikola Tesla versus the United States of America.
Counsel will make their appearance on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. If it would please the court, I am Joanne Sanford, representing the estate of Nikola Tesla. As the court may be aware, Nikola Tesla sadly passed just 4 months ago.
The court is so aware, Ms. Sanford. Counsel?
If it would also please the court, I am Drew Jameson, the Assistant Attorney General of the United States, here representing the government's interest in this matter.
Before the court is a question of monumental importance to the world of communications, nothing less than who invented radio. Here we have two diametrically opposed views and interpretations of the facts. On one side, we have Mr. Nikola Tesla, who was universally viewed as a genius. His early experiments contributed to the discovery of radio. However, it is indisputable that the gifted Italian inventor Guglielmo Marconi was the first to patent a radio device with the United States Patent Office. Hence, the government's interest in involvement in this case. Regarding such interest, I am informed by Mr. Hoover of the Federal Bureau of Investigation that certain matters may involve national security. Is that correct, Mr. Jameson?
It is, Mr. Chief Justice.
That is not disputed, Mr. Chief Justice, although we will demonstrate that the government has hidden this information, not only from my client, but from the American people as well.
I most adamantly object, Your Honor. Nothing is further from the truth.
On that statement, we can rely, Mr. Jameson.
You demean the President, madam, and our government.
I would counter, sir, that seizing Mr. Tesla's files and scientific drawings while he lay dead in his hotel room is demeaning. What gave the FBI the right to do that?
That is an outrage, Miss Sanford.
Do you deny that it occurred?
Counsel.
The government had an interest in those papers.
It had an interest in exploiting Mr. Tesla's inventions.
Mr. Chief Justice, I demand that we seal the record immediately. This is a matter of national interest.
That it is, Mr. Jameson. Mr. Tesla was always acting in the interest of the nation, only to find himself discredited and deceived by those closest to himself. And now, it seems, the government as well.
Any more outbursts, counsel, and the national interest will be served by placing both of you under arrest for contempt. This proceeding shall be conducted with the proper decorum befitting this high court. We will start with Mr. Tesla's case. Are you ready to proceed, Miss Sanford?
I am, Your Honor. I thank Your Honor for his gracious observation that my client was viewed as a genius. that his inventions dramatically changed the world is uncontested, although this conclusion is still not shared by many of his scientific contemporaries who were frankly jealous of his brilliance and success. They say that opposites attract, and that defined Tesla's relationship with Thomas Edison his entire life, with a more than occasional reversal of polarity and great repulsion, much like the alternating current device Tesla would later invent. In 1883, a young Tesla bid farewell to his family and set sail to America. His meager savings literally took him to the doorsteps of the laboratory where the Wizard of Menlo Park resided. Arriving at Mr. Edison's office, Tesla presented the great inventor with the letter of introduction written by a European associate of Mr. Edison. Tesla read this aloud to add to its effect.
My dear Edison, I know two great men, and you are one of them. The other is this young man.
Rather presumptuous, wouldn't you agree, Mr. Tesla?
The truth, by its very nature, Mr. Edison, cannot be presumptuous. Your solution to electric power is unworkable. Direct current cannot be sent more than a few yards over a wire without the need for a generator. That is why my alternating current is superior. The power surges back and forth, gathering force like a great wave and needing no augmentation at all. The future has rendered your invention irrelevant.
Needless to say, Your Honor, Mr. Edison was taken aback. Moreover, given his substantial investment in direct current, he was not about to change horses. Besides, Tesla was no different than any other upstart who paid a call on the great wizard of Menlo Park. He had a standard way of exposing such charlatans.
Mr. Tesla, let us start with the project at hand. My assistants have heretofore been unable to increase the efficiency of my DC turbine, which I'm sure can be enhanced by at least 70%. You are now in charge of that task, Mr. Tesla. Moreover, my boy, I will give you $50,000 if you can deliver on this assignment.
Mr. Tesla took the bait and worked tirelessly night and day to prove his excellence. 4 months later, he presented Mr. Edison with a working prototype of a DC turbine, which exceeded the bargained-for requirements. Said Mr. Edison,
"Well done, my boy. Well done."
Said Mr. Tesla,
"I will collect my payments, sir."
Now, Edison was beside himself. He thought this was an impossible job, and he never expected to pay. Said Mr. Edison, and this is an actual quote, Your Honor.
When you become a full-fledged American, you will appreciate an American joke.
Not one to dilly-dally, Mr. Tesla informed Mr. Edison where specifically his electric current should be directed. Tesla then secured funding from Western Union and George Westinghouse himself to build his alternating current turbine. Not one to shirk from a battle and a master of public relations, Edison launched a propaganda campaign to convince the American public that AC current was uncontrollable and dangerous. In fact, he even hooked up Tesla's invention to a chair and offered it to the New York State prison system as a more efficient way to reduce overcrowding.
Miss Sanford, this is all well and good, but not relevant to the issue before the court. Who was the true inventor of radio, Mr. Tesla or Mr. Marconi?
Your Honor, respectfully, it has everything to do with it. The alternating current just so happened to produce an electrical effect never before witnessed. It seemed that waves of energy were produced along with the electricity, and Mr. Tesla was the first to realize that these waves could be tapped to send and receive signals. Such was the birth of radio.
On that I have serious doubts, sir. Mr. Marconi developed and tested the first radio device just 2 years later. Most believe that he could not send a signal across a bathtub, and yet he transmitted the world's first radio signals across the English Channel.
And that is debatable, Mr. Justice.
It is not debatable that Mr. Marconi also sent the first radio signal across the Atlantic and filed the first patent for this device.
Using Tesla's oscillator. That's not debatable either.
Unfortunately, the United States Patent Office did not agree, nor did the Nobel Committee, which awarded its prize to Marconi. The facts are the facts, Miss Sanford. We're a nation of laws, madam, not emotions or empathy.
I must reply that in law, most facts are not what they appear to be. There is nothing certain about these facts other than their contestability. Nikola Tesla won on the facts back in 1903. It is undisputed that the patent office refused to grant Marconi a patent for his radio invention. I quote directly from the patent office finding, dated 1903. Quote, many of Marconi's claims are not patentable, as well as Marconi's pretended ignorance of the nature of a Tesla oscillator being little short of absurd. The term Tesla oscillator has become a household word in Europe and North America. Close quote. Gentlemen, the greatest insult of all was Marconi's alleged crowning achievement of the transcontinental radio signal in 1901. Perhaps Mr. Jameson can illuminate the court as to the nature of the transmitter that powered this Herculean device. Does the Assistant Attorney General wish to elaborate?
None of this is relevant.
Oh, I disagree. The transmitter was a Tesla oscillator. Case closed. Or it should have been. In 1904, the patent office reversed itself, invalidated Tesla's patent, and declared Marconi to be the inventor of radio. Now, what could have transpired between 1903 and 1904 that caused the patent office to reverse itself 180 degrees?
Miss Sanford, the explanation is simplistic. It was the legal process. New evidence is always a basis for reversal.
Can you inform this court as to the contents of such new evidence?
The record speaks for itself.
All 620,000 pages?
Yes, ma'am.
If it would please the court and displease the government, our experts reviewed every page and diagram and notation and concluded that there was no new evidence at all which could have justified the reversal of the decision.
Then what is your explanation, counsel?
It was the fortune of Mr. Marconi and his company. Add to that, Tesla's old nemesis, Edison, invested heavily in Marconi Wireless and used his influence to undermine Tesla. And the tragedy here, Your Honor, is that Tesla was forced to do battle with Marconi as his own backers deserted him. This was a loss not just for Tesla, but the world, for Tesla was now pioneering a scientific effort which dwarfed the discovery of radio. His experiments, had they proceeded, would have made our proud technological innovations of the 1940s seem like the 1440s.
Not so, Your Honor. Sadly, Mr. Tesla's psychological state deteriorated rapidly after Mr. Marconi's victory. The evidence before the court establishes that Mr. Tesla suffered from debilitating neuroses, which worsened. Seemed like his major preoccupation was spending the day and night in Central Park, taking copious notes of the behavior of pigeons, or calculating the volume of the liquid precisely in a cup of tea before he could bring it to his lips. The facts are that Mr. Tesla did not have the mental acumen to create any of these devices, let alone take care of himself or those filthy birds.
The facts, Mr. Jameson, are that the government made him that way. They had a vendetta against my client.
There are no such facts. The facts, madam, demonstrate that your client was more enamored of pigeons and cats than human beings. He never married or formed any lasting personal relationships. It seems his singular affection over the many years was his remembrance of the magnificent macaque, his childhood feline. Mr. Tesla was strikingly handsome and impeccably dressed. He could have dined with any of the socialites of Park Avenue, let alone Broadway starlets. Instead, he literally brought pigeons home as dinner guests and no doubt reminisced about his adoring childhood friend, macaque.
Your Honor, Mr. Jameson distorts a memory which is virtually legend. Tesla claimed his fascination in electricity began one cold winter's day when he was 3 years old and experienced the thrill of drawing static electric sparks from the fur of macaque, his pet cat. This strange effect, caused by the intense cold and dry air, started him wondering about natural electricity, the lightning of storms. Later, he would write in his journal,
"Is nature a gigantic cat? If so, who strokes his back? It can only be God."
Cats from outer space. Come now, Miss Sanford. Obviously, Mr. Tesla was not of sound mind.
That claim is outrageous and unsubstantiated.
Oh, is it? Well, then let the evidence speak for itself. I refer the court to the psychiatric records of Mr. Tesla's own doctor, if I may read an excerpt.
You may not, Mr. Jameson. The court is perfectly able to review this evidence.
May I then make a proffer?
Be brief, Mr. Jameson.
The evidence would show that Mr. Tesla was plagued by debilitating obsessions which worsened during this period. It is widely known that he would endlessly circle around his hotel for hours until he was able to enter the lobby. It was later determined he was obsessed with the number 3 and built an exhausting ritual which required him to precede any action or completed thought upon the execution of an endless series of 3 tasks. It is also known that Mr. Tesla would only occupy a hotel room with a number divisible by 3. In fact, his room on the 33rd floor of the New Yorker Hotel, where he lived out the last decades of his life, bore the number 3327.
What say you, Miss Sanford?
We will concede that Mr. Tesla was eccentric and at times tortured by his own obsessions. Such is frequently the psychological state of geniuses. I met with Mr. Tesla extensively in preparation for this case, and admittedly he often seemed detached, as if his mind was removed to a different place or time. He once confided that he received his ideas from an unknown source, which could only be described as extraworldly.
I have been feeding pigeons, thousands of them for years. But there was one pigeon, a beautiful bird, pure white with light gray tips on its wings. That one was different. It was a female. I would know that pigeon anywhere. No matter where I was, that pigeon would find me. When I wanted her, I had only to wish and call her, and she would come flying. She understood me, and I understood her. I loved that pigeon. Yes, I loved her as a man loves a woman, and she loved me. When she was ill, I knew and understood. She came to my room, and I stayed by her for days. I nursed her back to health. That pigeon was the joy of my life. If she needed me, nothing else mattered. As long as I had her, there was purpose in my life. Then one night, as I was lying in my bed in the dark, solving problems as usual, she flew in through an open window and stood at my desk. I knew she wanted me. She wanted to tell me something important, so I got up and went to her. As I looked at her, there came a light from her eyes, powerful beams of light. It was a real light, a powerful, dazzling, blinding light, a light more intense than any I had ever produced in my laboratory. I knew what she wanted to tell me. She wanted me to follow her in my imagination, beyond the sun, moon, and stars. And with a regal turn of her beak, she took flight. And I followed. Proceed with your evidence, Miss Sanford.
Thank you, Your Honor. Tesla was certain that his invention of radio and legacy were secure. That being the case, he turned his attention exclusively to a radically new idea, whether it might be possible to transmit electrical power not over the wires, which were sprouting across America and Europe, but through the air. Tesla acquired property in Colorado Springs and set out to work. To illustrate, I call the court's attention to the deposition of Nikola Tesla, taken by none other than the Assistant Attorney General himself. I start now with the most important excerpts and let Mr. Jameson's words speak for themselves. If the clerk would kindly play the recording for the court, marked as Respondent's Exhibit A.
Any objection, Mr. Jameson?
None, Your Honor.
The clerk is instructed to play the recording in open court.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Tesla, I remind you that you are under oath. Do you understand this, sir?
I do.
And you have consented to the government's request that your testimony be tape-recorded.
Indeed.
I must also emphasize, Mr. Tesla, that being under oath means your statements are made under penalty of perjury and must be true without equivocation. Is that clear?
I have nothing to hide, Mr. Jameson. The truth has always been my ally. And your nemesis.
Objection? Non-responsive. The court reporter will strike that statement from the transcript. Tesla, what year did you move your experiments to Colorado Springs?
1899.
Isn't it true that you announced to reporters shortly after your arrival in Colorado Springs that your stated intention was to transmit a wireless telegraphy signal from Pike's Peak to Paris?
Correct.
Isn't it also correct that you obtained a substantial investment in the experiment from Mr. John Jacob Astor for the stated purpose of transmitting a wireless signal from Colorado to Paris?
I cannot disagree with that.
But that's not what you did, is it, Mr. Tesla? Instead, you built a large tower at your facility to generate and transmit electrical power. Now, isn't that correct?
That is true. And the record should reflect that I was successful.
Is it true, Mr. Tesla, that you are widely known as a visionary?
Yes. Is that a crime, sir?
It is not your place at this deposition to ask questions, Mr. Tesla. I request that the court reporter strike that testimony as non-responsive. Mr. Tesla, is it also true that most, if not all, of these inventions never materialized?
I take exception, sir. I know that this court is illuminated by a fluorescent light, which I divined, not to mention the electric generators powering them, and in every home in America.
Mr. Tesla, I quote from your article in Century Magazine for its January 1st, 1900 edition, quote, I foresee a world system of wireless communication to relay telephone messages across the ocean, to broadcast news, stock market reports, private messages, secure military communications, even pictures to every part of the world. Close quote. You even predicted that the Earth itself is a gigantic conductor like a battery which could be tapped to supply all of the world's electricity.
Indeed, I did, sir.
Now I ask you, Mr. Tesla, have you sent any wireless signals carrying messages across the Atlantic, as Marconi accomplished?
No, I did not, sir.
I rest my case.
But I sent a wireless signal across Times Square. It was that technology Marconi exploited to transmit his signal over the sea.
You were bested by Marconi, sir. A fact which you have yet to confront. Moreover, your baseless speculations are sheer nonsense. Do you expect this court to believe in magic? Come now, pictures, and even music spirited across the continent? Unthinkable. Balderdash. Did you accomplish that miracle, Mr. Tesla?
In part, sir.
Mr. Tesla, as you sit here today, you have not harnessed the Earth as a generator.
That is true.
And why is that so, Mr. Tesla?
It's because of people like you, sir. Belters and obstructionists, vapid and unimaginative. Lawyers, sir, just like you.
Does that description also apply to industrialist John Jacob Astor?
No, I would not describe Mr. Astor that way.
And yet, he pulled the literal plug on your Colorado Springs experiment, did he not?
A blunder he will live to regret. Besides, Mr. J.P. Morgan became my next benefactor. He gladly supplied the capital to bring my dream to fruition. I called it Wardenclyffe. It rose 187 feet from an empty field in Long Island and was capped by a 68-foot copper dome, which held the magnifying transmitter at Colorado Springs. I created lightning bolts 200 feet long. A mere firecracker of what Wardenclyffe would produce.
And what would that be, Mr. Tesla?
Nothing less than wireless transmission of electricity to light our homes, power our machines, even propel our automobiles. Imagine sending enormous amounts of energy to any part of the world to power airplanes and ocean liners, even destroy warships thousands of miles away.
But that was not what you promised, Mr. Morgan. That was not the deal you negotiated for the money supplied. You deceived him, sir. You had no interest whatsoever in perfecting the transmission of a radio signal in 1901.
I had already accomplished that.
You promised Mr. Morgan that you would transmit a radio signal across the globe. Isn't that what you promised Mr. Morgan and the sole basis of his investment?
It was.
Ah. Then we finally agree on something, Mr. Tesla. Why did you violate Mr. Morgan's trust?
I was going to offer him a reward of much greater value.
But that never occurred. Did it, Mr. Tesla?
No, sir.
Madam Court Reporter, that concludes the deposition and this tape recording. Your Honor, the estate of Nikola Tesla respectfully moves for the admission of this recording as Respondent's Exhibit A.
Any objections, Mr. Jameson?
None, Your Honor. I'm confident that the recorded testimony speaks for itself.
And that it does, Mr. Jameson. We concede that Mr. Tesla's intent was not to transmit radio signals. That had already been demonstrated and will be documented. That was why my client was not disturbed when Marconi sent the radio signal in 1901. He was using Mr. Tesla's technology. This alleged accomplishment by Marconi caused Mr. Morgan to discontinue further investment in Wardenclyffe. My client did confront Mr. Morgan and explained that the true purpose of the tower was to make electricity available to anyone in the world and without wires. That, Mr. Morgan withdrew all of his funds, exclaiming,
"If any person could draw on the power, where do we put the meter?"
It was then Mr. Tesla had no choice. His tower would be taken offline. That last night at Wardenclyffe, Tesla and his lead engineer made the incredible decision to activate the tower prematurely, to demonstrate to the world that a thunderous power could be generated, magnified 10,000-fold, and then transmitted to a specific location. Mr. Tesla selected the target with enormous care and precision so as to avoid loss of life. Tesla flipped the switch himself, and a strange glow descended on Wardenclyffe, then barely perceptible. A purple haze gathered around the base of the tower, grew larger and brighter, transforming the metal into a sparkling purple diamond as it ascended the tower, encircling the huge copper sphere. Unfortunately, targeting in 1908 was most imprecise. In Berlin, the New York Times reported the following on July 3rd.
Remarkable lights were observed in the northern heavens. Bright, diffused white and yellow illumination continued through the night until it disappeared at dawn. There was a complete absence of scintillation or flickering, and no formation of streamers or luminous arch characteristic of auroral phenomena. Twilight on this night was prolonged until daybreak, and there was no real darkness.
There was later speculation that a massive meteorite struck Siberia, which caused the explosion and devastation of the landscape. However, no evidence was ever uncovered. It was later determined that the explosion was the equivalent of 15,000 tons of dynamite.
Your Honor, this all makes for great entertainment, and it seems the subject of Orson Welles' infamous radio broadcast, The War of the Worlds.
With all due respect, the government knows this is not a fantasy. Why else would my client's papers be seized by the Federal Bureau of Investigation? In fact, they were never recovered.
That is preposterous.
And that is a shameful rejoinder, Your Honor.
That is the truth, madam. A fact that your feminine mind refuses to grasp.
Please, please the court and displease the Assistant Attorney General, the estate of Nikola Tesla has obtained a confidential memorandum prepared for FBI Director Hoover's attention following my client's death.
Objection, Your Honor. New evidence and inadmissible.
Miss Sanford, are you able to authenticate this evidence as being an official record of the Federal Bureau of Investigation?
I am, Your Honor.
The government demands the right to examine this alleged evidence.
So granted. However, I will let Miss Sanford proceed with this evidence subject to the government's subsequent review and objection, which I will rule on at that time.
Then I shall proceed, Your Honor. Marked as Respondent's Exhibit B is a memorandum prepared by FBI Agent Foxworth of the New York Field Office, dated January 12, 1943, and prepared for Mr. J. Edgar Hoover's personal attention. I read. Summary Department of Justice teletype states Tesla died January 8th, rather than Thursday, January 7th, as stated in teletype. On the night of January 8th, Sava Kasanovich, George Clark, and Kenneth Sweezy visited Tesla's hotel room with a representative of Shaw Walker Company in order to open Tesla's safe. Kasanovich was looking for Tesla's will. Sweezy took a book. Fitzgerald of Alien Property Control went to the hotel and seized the property of Tesla, consisting of about 2 truckloads of material, sealed all articles, and transferred them to the Manhattan Storage and Warehouse Company, New York, where they are now located. At that time, there were also 30 barrels and bundles belonging to Tesla, which had been there since 1934. These also have been sealed.
Irrelevant, Your Honor. Besides, Miss Sanford has failed to inform this court that the alleged files were never located at a Manhattan warehouse as alleged.
Because they were relocated by the government. That is obvious.
Continue, Miss Sanford.
Marked as Respondent's Exhibit C is a memorandum also prepared by FBI Agent Foxworth of the New York Field Office, dated January 9, 1943. And again, prepared for Mr. J. Edgar Hoover's personal attention. I read. Teletype states Sava Kasanovich, intensely disliked by Tesla, is trying to gain possession of Tesla's effects. Spanel thinks Sava will make this information available to the enemy. Spanel was in telephonic communication with Dr. Glazado, an advisor to Vice President Wallace, and was told to lose no time in doing what he could to preserve Tesla's effects. Blois Fitzgerald, who had been quite close to Tesla, advised he had completed and perfected his experiments in connection with the wireless transmission of power. Fitzgerald talks of a new torpedo and knows the whereabouts of plans. He also says that a working model that costs $10,000 to build is in the safety deposit box of the Governor Clinton Hotel. He thinks the model has to do with Tesla's death ray, or the wireless transmission of electrical current. The Bureau is requested to advise immediately what action to take. The name Foxworth is typed at the bottom of this page.
Objection. Relevancy in hearsay, Your Honor. There is no evidence to establish that any such inventions were ever found at the alleged safe deposit box. What Miss Sanford describes are the efforts of Tesla's relatives to locate his will and identify assets, nothing more. I challenge Miss Sanford to produce such a will, if it exists, and any so-called devices in safe deposit boxes. Absurd. I assure Miss Sanford and this court, if such an invention had been developed, the government would be foolhardy not to bring this design to fruition, given the storm clouds of war which are looming.
Agreed, which is why the FBI seized the files, else they fall into the hands of the Germans, or worse, the Russians.
Grand speculation, and conveniently for Miss Sanford, quite impossible to prove.
Not so.
Come again.
The estate of Nikola Tesla intends to offer up new evidence, which we hope will establish once and for all what truly happened. If it would please the court, I wish to proffer, here and now, Mr. Tesla's final iteration.
Objection, Your Honor. The court is charged to review the prior record, not new evidence.
That is true, but it is also true that this is a most remarkable case, the likes of which this court has never before seen. Miss Sanford, go forward, but at your own peril. Most likely, all of this evidence will be stricken.
Understood. Mr. Chief Justice, I now present to you a new device invented by Mr. Tesla, which will hopefully shed light on the important matters before this court and the world.
Balderdash again, I say. Mr. Tesla has passed away. What relevance could this alleged invention possibly have?
It is undisputed that Nikola Tesla incarnate has passed, but not so his imagination, which lives on in this device.
Object, Your Honor. The government pleads surprise. We have never seen this device before.
But you have. It's the very heart of this dispute, from the beginning. The Tesla coil.
This is a cheap parlor trick. What possible significance could this alleged evidence provide?
But this is not an ordinary Tesla coil. It was modified shortly before Mr. Tesla died.
This smacks of a Houdini spectacle. Counselor, you are advised to proceed with great caution.
The FBI was extremely efficient and seized all of my client's papers and materials at the New Yorker Hotel. What they neglected to find, however, is the device now being brought out, front and center. No one knew this machine existed. Tesla referenced it in his last will and testament. The reason this will was not found by Tesla's heir and the FBI was that it was held in the safe at my law firm and with accompanying instructions to be followed precisely. We were led to a safe deposit box and then a key to a storage facility in Colorado Springs where the device was situated. Our electrical experts examined the equipment but can only speculate as to its function. Although it resembled a Tesla coil, the twisted wires were more elongated and resembled a staircase of sorts. Unlike Tesla's prior devices, which were encased in copper, the surface of the coils was forged in solid gold. We can only assume that whatever meager resources Tesla had at this time were dedicated to this machine. Sadly, as he wasted away, he saved what scraps remained to nourish his beloved Central Park pigeons. Along with the device was a worn envelope with a notation not to open until my client was deceased. I personally opened the envelope 3 months ago on January 9th, 1943, and found a letter in Tesla's hand dated December 25th, 1901. I was instructed to read the following statement in its entirety, and shall do so now. Quote, Miss Sanford, you are hereby instructed to secure the transportation of this device to the United States District Courthouse in Washington, D.C. for the activation at precisely 4:15 p.m. on April 9th, 1943. I am confident that technicians present will be able to connect the device to the power source. Nikola Tesla. Close quote.
I move to strike this trickery. Dear Lord, the letter was allegedly written in 1901, which is an impossibility.
Then answer me this, Mr. Jameson. The letter is addressed to me directly, signed and sealed 11 years before I was even born.
Sherlock Holmes would say it is elementary. There is nothing mysterious about fraud and forgery. Obviously, the writing was generated or altered after Mr. Tesla passed away.
And does that also include Mr. Tesla's specific reference to the date and time of this proceeding?
It does, madam.
Then I would reconfirm your facts, Mr. Jameson. The clerk will inform you that this letter has been in the custody of this esteemed court for the past 8 months. The court will also inform you that the date for this hearing was not set until 2 weeks ago. You need only glance at your timepiece to verify the current time is 4:12 p.m.
This is all true, Miss Sanford. I have no explanation for this anathema, but neither can I or this court explain the appearance of a white rabbit. Are you suggesting to this court that Mr. Tesla is engaged in time travel? And what could be the purpose of this contraption, to bring your client back from the grave?
I do not know, Your Honor. I shall merely carry out my instructions to Mr. Tesla dutifully as executor of his estate. It shall be for this court to determine what conclusions are to be drawn.
Indeed. Proceed.
I am assured by our technicians that this device has been installed pursuant to Mr. Tesla's specifications.
Miss Sanford, how do we know this device can be safely operated? If we are to believe your incredible testimony, Mr. Tesla's most infamous experiment obliterated much of Siberia.
My experts have concluded that there is very little chance of that. This device is minuscule compared to Mr. Tesla's transmission coils, which towered in Colorado Springs and Wardenclyffe. I have been informed that a speaker reminiscent of a radio receiver is embedded in the device. Thus, we can only surmise that this incredible device exists not to transmit electricity, but to receive signals of some sort. However, none of the components of modern radio are present. All that is left is for me to turn the dial to activate the device. I ask the court for permission to now do so.
A most remarkable case, indeed. Permission so granted. You may proceed, Miss Afford.
Many of you will doubt that they can use my voice.
Or if so, that it was recorded using Mr. Edison's phonograph. I assure you, it was not. You are hearing my voice projected wirelessly and transmitted across a far greater expanse than a mere ocean. Tom was working on a most unique adaptation of Mr. Bell's telephone. I was also developing such a device independently based on my Tesla coil, which was the only logical solution. Looks like I bested Mr. Edison once again.
Not so, Tesla.
You are communicating now through my invention, are you not? And postmortem? And what about that $50,000 prize you owe me? Will I have to wait until the next millennium to claim what is rightfully mine?
When you become a full-fledged American, you will appreciate an American joke. Nikola, you have always wasted your time on speculative projects. Like this diatribe, for example. What possible difference could it make? We know what is to come.
The immediate future, yes. It is the future a century hence of which I am concerned. My wireless electricity could have changed that. It could still change that.
Speculation, Nikola.
Not so.
But it did not happen, Tesla. That is why this speculation is a waste of time. No matter what you tell them, it is of no moment. If this were otherwise, we would not be conversing so. We know the future, and nothing changed. It is immutable, just like your impulsiveness.
I cannot accept that.
And that has been your fatal flaw, Nikola. To accept the obvious.
Perhaps. But I have always believed in the power of imagination. The ability of mankind to transform itself. Why not this time? I will try. I must try. This last time. Mr. Chief Justice and able counselors of the court, unbeknownst to the Sanford and my beneficiaries, I care not if I will be credited with invention of wireless radio. This is not a time or place for vanity. Besides, I have already read the court's decision. It is a greater concern of which I must speak. In this final void, I have felt such indescribable loneliness. And that's when she came to me. I wanted her again, and I only had to wish and call her, and she came flying to me. She stood before me, this angel of flight. As I looked at her, I knew she wanted to tell me she was dying. And then I received her message. She wanted me to follow her again, but not in space, in time. Beyond this moment, this year, this decade, 100 years hence. And so I followed her as she beat her wings and winced in pain and exhaustion until she stopped. And with all of the final energy. energy she could muster. She turned her regal beak below to a world I moved. It was a dark and desolate place, sheathed only in blacks and gray. Try as I may, I would not discern its features. And when I listened closely, I could hear her weep. I am now left to wonder what could have been. Miss Sanford is aware that I perfected an electric car before events overtook me. This technology, like my other ideas, was obliterated by partisan interests or greed. Such was my common theme in my life. I tell you all that the plans for my device and others more miraculous exist today and are in the hands of the American government, which they will deny. Find these devices and you can change the world. Oh, my sweet macaque. You understand, don't you?
We've lost the signal, Your Honor.
The government moves, once again, to strike all of this alleged evidence and seal it from public disclosure. Its truth cannot be verified, and there is no witness to be cross-examined unless this honorable court intends to convene a seance. The United States moves to strike and seal, Your Honor.
Your Honor, if this evidence is as speculative as the government asserts, then why seal its disclosure from the American people?
That will be enough, Miss Sanford. This court is now prepared to deliver its decision in the case of Tesla versus the United States of America.
All rise!
Before the court is the matter styled Tesla versus the United States of America. We are here presented with a fundamental question of great interest to the world, to wit, who invented the radio? Based on the proper and admissible evidence before this court, it is hereby ordered that Mr. Marconi's patent is invalidated and the prior invention of wireless radio by Nikola Tesla is sustained and affirmed. Be it forever recalled and reported that Mr. Nikola Tesla was and is the inventor of radio. All other evidence is stricken from the record as inadmissible hearsay. However, this court shall deny the government's oral motion that this evidence be sealed.
But, Mr. Chief...
It is the order of this court that all such evidence, including but not limited to the device here demonstrated, shall be immediately turned over to the Federal Bureau of Investigation to be retained or discarded, subject to the sole discretion of the United States government. It is so ordered.
But, Your Honor...
It is so ordered.
All rise! God bless this honorable court and the United States of America. Good night, ladies and gentlemen.
Tonight, Deus Ex Machina and its affiliated stations from all over the world brought to you Tesla versus the United States by Charles Master. The first production in a series of dramatic broadcasts, it featured the voice talents of Kara Bliss, Joe Hartman, Adam Dahlmoyer, Dave Nevelin, and Charles Master. Theatrical direction and organ performances by Adam Dahlmoyer, with music composed by Charles Master and Adam Dahlmoyer. Dave Nevelin recorded and produced it at Music Tunes Entertainment Studios in Austin, Texas. Next time, we'll present A Year to Remember, the original story of one man's journey through time and mind. For more info, visit us at fromdeus.com. That's from DEUS.com. This is Deus Ex Machina, signing off.